This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Paul Nyer was sexually abused by Father Jeff Drew when Nyer was a little boy, and Drew was a lay music minister in Cincinnati. After years of staying silent about what happened to him, Nyer reported the crime to authorities. Drew pleaded guilty to 9 counts of rape and is serving time in prison. Now Nyer is urging Ohio lawmakers to pass legislation that would help other survivors. Joining me to talk about the case and the proposed legislation are abuse survivor Paul Nyer and his wife Liesl Nyer. Thank you both for being here today.
Thank you for having us.
And WCPO I-Team Chief Investigative Reporter Craig Cheatham. Welcome back, Craig.
Thanks, Lucy.
And a warning, parts of this discussion might be upsetting for some of our listeners. Paul, can you talk to us first about how old you were when you met Father Drew and where you met him? I understand he wasn't a priest at the time. He was a lay music minister. Can you talk to us a little bit about that?
Yeah, that's correct. On the west side of Cincinnati, there is a church and school, private school, Catholic school, called St. Jude. I attended that school from first grade through sixth, first meeting him as a small child. Realistically, I can't put a date and time on when he was there and whatnot, but that's when I first met him.
Yeah.
First contact was just as a peer for a student.
Mm. And some of the accounts I've read were about 8 years old at the time, or?
When these things started to take place, yes, I was 8 years old.
Okay. Can you tell us, and I don't want you to, have to get into lots of detail, but what happened when you say these things started to take place?
So essentially, as an 8 year old, I was adopted. And from being adopted, my parents began to tell me they felt I was mature enough to understand. As I was maturing, I was getting made fun of by other kids at school, and just normal kids things that probably could have been done better. But in that, I started to struggle. So my parents, being good parents, they reached out to the school who has the most contact with me during the day and said, we'd really like our son to talk to somebody. We don't know what's going on. This opened the door for an opportunity for them to send me to the school counselor / music teacher, Mr. Drew.
Mm.
He had an office that was outside of the school itself. It was situated in the church. And when I got over there, conversation led to touching led to oral, and then things progressed there from him sexually assaulting me.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Talk to us about how that affected your life and your relationships from the time it all started happening.
It's impacted me in every single way. And I know that when someone says that, the understanding isn't there. It's easy to look at, the 40-something me, and you don't see that 8 to 10-year-old kid. But it affected me on every level, from communication to relationships to self-worth to doubt to how I loved women growing up or thought that's what it was. It changed everything about me. I was unable to, as an adult in my 30s and 40s, I have trouble dealing with men of authority. I've since passed that and have got a lot better through therapy and whatnot. But every account of my life, it was always over my shoulder. It was an identity. I was worthless.
And you said this happened from the time you were 8 until you were 10. This went on for quite a while.
It did. And then believing I wasn't in that lifestyle, that's who I was, who I identified as, the age of 14, late 13, early 14, I got onto the internet and these chat rooms and person approached me, said all the right things. I was in that mood as a child, seeking love, and this person invited me out. At 14, I took my parents' car, drove over to Mount St. Joseph Garage, and the other car that pulled up, it was Jeff Drew.
Oh, my gosh.
The hardest part, looking back as a man now to that boy then, was the man now could have left. The man now could have engaged that person physically in a way that wasn't what he was wanting.
Mm-hmm.
I could have just left. But that kid was like a wet sandbag, and I just went.
Oh.
So for me, being older and mentally in that moment, that was the worst one for me.
How did you ever talk to anyone about this?
No, it wasn't until I met my wife. My ex-wife, she had some knowledge of like the physical desires of me. But my wife now, when I first spoke to her, it was an open door. I wanted something different. She wanted all of me, and that was the only part of me that was still a lie, still unidentified, still unworthy. And when I was able to finally speak up to my wife, it was a real moment.
Wow. So Liesl was the first person you talked to about this?
Realistically, yeah. In depth, for sure.
Even before you talked to your parents?
Yeah.
Liesl, what was your reaction when you heard this part about your husband's life and something he'd been keeping inside for so long? What was your reaction?
I mean, initially, obviously, there's a sadness there separating the relationship that we had. Anytime someone goes through something like that, it's just, you can only imagine what that would feel like. And to not be able to really know for sure what he was going through. I think the hardest part for me was realizing that he had kept it quiet for so long. And then kind of the weight of like, oh, this, you know, he's trusting me with this. And then to watch him as he's telling me all of these things, thinking that this is going to be the thing that scares me away. That was difficult because it was kind of like, I think that was the first time that he had somebody look at him and, you know, you understand this wasn't your fault, right? And it was just like, he was shocked. You know, you're not leaving. You're not going to run away from me. I'm not disgusting. And I'm like, no, you're none of those things. You were a child. Like, I don't know how anyone could look at you and say those things to you. So that was the initial like hit of when he opened up to me about it. But then it was, I mean, it's just something that he's had a kind of an open line of communication with me because of that from day one. So
there was that time frame, and it's true now with you see with all the shootings and whatnot, but there's a time frame in the 80s that if you are gay, you are going to hell. And I grew up in that church that told the same thing. So I had my peers around me telling me that this is you are going to hell. And nobody was sharing any of that information. Plus, two, there were many times back then where people had come forward about incidents that happened, and they were placated as they were the assailant. They are coming after the church. They're doing this to bring out the bad. When the history and the records indicate, it's not.
Paul, what made you decide to go to authorities? What was it that made you decide beyond telling Liesl, I need to go to the authorities about this?
So I actually went to authorities beforehand. Now, when I say that, my friend works for the city of Cincinnati. I, too, was a former police officer. And I knew the amount of things that would come out of this. And I also knew that 80s persona of what it would do to me. So all those memories are coming back up. And I'm telling these to my friend, who in turn I told him, hey, I've shared this at a fire at a church outing called Man Camp that I go to, and I feel like I got to keep saying it. I don't know if I'm ready to go forward. And this happened for probably about 7-8 months. And then finally, I called this officer and I said, hey, I don't know what the next step is, but I'm tired of living like this. I reached out to him. He had an interaction with Detective Jana Jones on an overtime detail. He goes, you won't believe the person that's sitting in front of me as you were having this conversation. And it snowballed. I met with Dana on that following Monday, I believe, that from when we spoke, he spoke to her over the weekend. And it just snowballed. That's where it went. The real point of me coming forward is when I shared my story for the first time. On a stage in front of about 1,500 men, I realized that it was bigger than this. You know, it was bigger than Jeff Drew. It was bigger than Paul Nyers, bigger than the Archdiocese of Cincinnati. It is everywhere.
Liesl, how did you see this affect your husband? How have you seen this affect your husband? Just this, the weight of what happened to him and the decision to go to authorities and seek to prosecute Father Drew.
Yeah. I mean, in the beginning, it definitely was the heaviest. In the beginning of the legal process was probably the heaviest of all of it. It consumed him. I kind of watched him more or less just kind of slip away into just a state of depression. And I really didn't recognize this person that I was living with. And there was many times, and we've talked about this since, but there were times where I was pretty sure that I was going to come home and find him.
There was a point in the case where I was at a camp, and I shared this with the last group of people that I spoke with. I was not going to go up on stage at this one at that point in time, but I was involved with the security of this. So here you got a 15-year law enforcement veteran that was on SWAT, all these things, going through this, not communicating that with my friends. I was able to communicate that with my wife, but there's this picture of an atlas where a man's holding the world over his shoulders. And so here I am carrying this, and I can't say, hey, man, this is really bothering me. I get a phone call from Clay Thorpe that says we're going to continue.
Yeah, and that was I'm watching him spiral at this point because the case kept getting pushed back and everything. And it was like every time he would build up the courage to prepare for trial, it got pushed back. And those were the times I think that he was at his darkest and his lowest. And when the prosecutor called me and told me that they were going to delay it, and I mean, I was in tears begging him on the phone to find a way to not make it happen. And he kept saying, you know, this is going to be fine. This is for the best. And I said, I don't think you understand. Like, you're not going to have a victim if we delay this again. Like, he can't go through this. And he said, no, it's going to be okay. And I said, no, I don't think you understand what I'm saying. I don't think he's going to be alive. And it was kind of like I'm scrambling there he's trying to call him and I'm scrambling trying to call other people that were there. Like, somebody needs to be with him when he gets this phone call because he's not going to handle it well.
And here I am standing in front of 1,500 people, firearm on my hip, involved to protect the situations of where I'm at. And all I can think about is, this is a beautiful moment. This is a beautiful moment. This will be okay.
We're talking about childhood sexual abuse and Ohio legislation designed to help survivors with abuse survivor Paul Nyer and his wife Liesl Nyer and WCPOI team chief investigative reporter Craig Cheatham. We're going to continue our discussion in just a moment. Later in the program, we'll talk with experts about how to keep your spending in check this holiday season. This is Cincinnati Edition.
Support comes from the Give Them 10 movement and their No Kill Cat mission, focused on educating those who love cats and those who do not on all the benefits of spaying and neutering. You can learn more about how both sides can agree that spaying and neutering is the right thing to do by visiting givethem10.org.
Support comes from Historic Milford Association in charming downtown Milford, Ohio, where you can shop and eat among a variety of locally owned and distinctive boutiques, galleries, shops, and restaurants, all while enjoying your favorite Dora drink strolling past storefronts decorated in the holiday spirit as you search for that perfect gift. To learn more, visit downtownmilford.com.
Support comes from York Vision, a business powered by female ingenuity, located across from Kenwood Town Center, now offering 3D face geometry, the next generation of custom fitting technology, as well as premium protection eyewear for sports by Wiley X. More online at yorkvisionkenwood.com. Fashion for faces.
Monday through Friday, WVXU has the news covered locally with our award-winning news team and nationally and globally with our partners at NPR Network and the BBC. And when you need a weekend break, we've got you covered. From Weekend Edition, This American Life, Latino USA, to The Splendid Table and Snap Judgment. Expand your horizons Saturdays and Sundays on 91.7 WVXU Cincinnati and 88.5 WMUB Oxford.
Support for Cincinnati Edition comes from the Johnson Foundation, a private grant-making foundation committed to creating a more vibrant urban core through community development and civic engagement. More information at johnson-foundation.org.
This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We continue our discussion about childhood sexual abuse and Ohio legislation designed to protect survivors with abuse survivor Paul Nyer and his wife Liesl Nyer and WCPOI team chief investigative reporter Craig Cheatham. A word of warning, parts of this conversation might be upsetting for some of our listeners. Craig, I want to talk to you next. Recently, you did some reporting on some documents that Paul obtained through an open records request, the investigation report, I believe, into this whole case. Talk to us about what was in those records, and was there information in there or detail in there that surprised you as a reporter who'd been talking with Paul and working on this story for such a long time?
It didn't surprise me, Lucy. One of the things that we didn't know, certainly not in any detail, was how far back the concerns, parents and children had concerns about the behavior of Jeff Drew. And what that investigation report told us was that there were concerns back at the time that, when Paul was at St. Jude, there were concerns expressed about Drew's comments and the way he touched children, the activities that he participated in with children. These are decade-old allegations. They're back at that time, there were no, at least according to this investigation report, there were no known incidents of sexual abuse by Drew, but there were a lot of people who were concerned about the way he interacted with children, and there were people, including clergy, who believed that it was inappropriate. We had reported several years ago when some members of the community had expressed concerns publicly that there were concerns about Drew shared by parents and children at three different churches. Those allegations went back over a decade. But what this investigation report told us is that there were concerns that went back much longer than that.
I want to note that we invited the Archdiocese of Cincinnati to join the program today. They declined the invitation but provided us with this statement. As previously and publicly acknowledged, the Archdiocese and administration made serious mistakes in the handling of this matter. We are grateful for the individuals who reported safe environment concerns about Jeff Drew. We've stated from the beginning and reaffirm now that the Archdiocesan administration has never received an allegation of rape against Jeff Drew, and the police investigation confirms this information. While complaints were received about his conduct and reported to authorities and law enforcement, no criminal activity was ever alleged or discovered. Our commitment to creating and maintaining safe environments is absolute. For more than two decades, we have had a comprehensive system for promptly responding to allegations of abuse if they occur. Since 2019, several additional safeguards have been put into place to ensure that the mistakes that occurred do not happen again. Paul, I'm looking at your body language as you hear that statement. Tell me what you think about that.
If they felt that they handled that wrong over that period of time, why was he in the largest church with the largest number of kids in the state or in Hamilton County? I'm sorry. To me, that is a bold-faced lie, the way that is written in there, how it only states he was never alleged rape from anybody else, but his actions definitely rose the flag for generations, and you made a choice to put him in the largest school that you have. Mm. Where's the thought process in this? Regardless of me, where's the thought process in this?
Paul, talk to us about what made you decide, after so many years of silence, of pain, of these, what was going through your mind and weighing on your psyche. Why did you decide to become such a public face for these issues?
I didn't. I was just somebody that came forward, and from that, and me speaking with other people in a church safe environment, I realized the amount of impact that this has on other people. Specifically, at the last camp I was at, I had the opportunity to speak in front of close to 2,000 men from 42 plus different states. One of them was a gentleman that came over from Mexico, and his name is Ray. Ray was raped between the ages of 4 and 8 years old. Ray's mom ended up getting married to this gentleman. They had a child. And by the time she reached that age, the rape continued because he saw the look in his stepfather's eyes was the same look that he gave him before this happened. And in order to protect his stepsister, he endured that pain continuously for years until his mother got him across the border. I was floored. I endured this pain for years. He endured it to save the life of another. And he only said this story because I came forward and had enough vulnerability, humbleness, and I wanted to share mine. It wasn't just that part of the story I shared. I shared multiple things more, but that's where he picked up on it. There were multiple other peoples there at that location too that did share some things.
Yeah. But that you have become an advocate for House Bill 266 that would eliminate the timelines on reporting and prosecuting child sexual abuse. Talk to us about why you're supporting that legislation and why you think it's important that to lift those statutes of limitations for crimes like this.
Real quick, before Paul speaks on that, I do want to just kind of throw out some numbers that I think people should be aware of, especially parents and things that would be voting on things like this, but or in support of people that make these decisions. But currently in Ohio, the civil suit age cutoff for sexual assault is 30 years old, and the criminal cutoff is 43. My husband came forward at 42 to authorities. The average age that someone comes forward from this is in their 50s. Like, mm-hmm. I believe it's 52 or 53. So having laws in place like this, and I've said this before, all they're doing is protecting the perpetrators and the people that enable those, the organizations that protect them and move them around and pretend like things aren't happening. It's doing nothing for the victims. So that's a big push for why we want to see this law passed, is because you're talking 1 in 4 girls and 1 in 6 boys. That's a lot of people impacted that don't have a chance to say anything.
Talk to us about how you feel about that, Paul. Why did you decide you need to, I mean, you've been in Columbus, you've talked about this. Why is this so important to you?
Realistically, because the story is not just mine. It's multiple people. There's multiple people out there that are hiding in the shadows like me and that pain that need to come forward. I realize that I don't want to be the voice of rape. I'm sitting across from you telling you that I don't like this. But I've seen the fruit of sharing the story and people hearing it and people seeing a person standing in place to go, if he can feel that good, maybe I can. And don't get me wrong, I still have my spider webs and haven't killed my spider and a lot of the things that are in my life. But I do have the marks of a man put in place to make these things better.
And why do you think it's important to lift that statute of limitations?
Quite simply because we need time to process. They don't get the time to protect their investments. So I've traveled through this, but they've allotted, knowing that there are statistic numbers that say we could easily allot to 30. We can allot to 55 when they come out, because that's going to cost us a lot of money. Whoever they may be, it doesn't have to be the organization of the AOC. It can be Boy Scouts, which is out there. It can be your school. A lot of people don't understand. This happened while I was attending school, in the school where parents think it's safe. I didn't have the opportunity to go after the Catholic Church for what I deemed I should have had a better childhood, a safer childhood, a place to grow and become me. I went to them. Not probably in the best manner. I went just my wife and myself. I didn't take an attorney. I sat across from the Archbishop. I sat across from their sexual abuse person that they have on staff and said, this is what I would like. I don't want a yacht. Don't want a mansion. This is real numbers from when I was here to here. I want nothing more. And they came back and offered me counseling. Would they want me to be counseled by the first counselor I went to? Because that didn't seem to work out. Just be accountable. And to have the opportunity to hold them accountable, that's nice.
Yeah. Well, and Liesl talked about how right now survivors have until they're 43 to report to the authorities. You were 42. I mean, did you know about that 43-year-old limit when you went to the authorities?
I can tell you as an officer, when you look at case law and you're looking at your – when you're writing somebody a ticket, you are not looking back at the case law and the extension that they have to get that stuff done. I had no idea. Zero. When I came forward, it was just perfect timing.
Has there been any healing that you've gotten from having these conversations, talking to these men, trying to get this law passed? Has that helped you heal in any way?
Going up to Columbus, there's no healing that comes out of that. You see the corporate, you see the top of the ladder looking down. There was six or seven of us that spoke a couple weeks ago, and not a single representative from the state came down to listen to our conversation. That bill is going up today. There are people up there from the Ohio, I don't want to misquote their name, the Ohioans for Child Protection. They're up there today. They know the House that bill is going to die out today, and we'll have to reintroduce it again next year. I hope that at some point in time they realize this is for the victims, and who they are protecting is the establishment.
Paul and Liesl, has this ever shaken your faith?
Absolutely. I mean, totally. Growing up, it was a wonder. Why weren't you there? Where were you? If you are this thing and you are this all-powerful, where were you? And it wasn't until I got older that I realized he's been there the whole time. It's not what he wants. But yeah, was my faith shooken as a younger adult? Absolutely. As an older adult and realizing the power and presence of community, the word, good people, and being vulnerable, humbling myself, I knew he was present.
Yeah, and I would say for me, it was hard. Like there was a lot of conversations where questioning why God allowed this to happen, especially to somebody that I cared about. But in some ways, I think it has strengthened mine because there have been numerous times throughout this case, like just looking at the statute of limitation laws and how they have changed and then the impact that he's been able to have and all these things that I can see God's hand all over everything. So I feel like he's taking something very awful and using it as an opportunity to bring light to the situation and to redeem what my husband's gone through and hopefully others as well.
And Paul, one last question for you. Do you have a message for other survivors, a message of hope maybe if people hear this and haven't come forward yet, they're living with the pain that you've lived with for so many years, what would you say to them?
Find a friend. Find somebody that you confide in, a mentor. Make a phone call, even to a hotline number if you have to, just to get it off your chest. I'm launching a podcast here in the near future called Trenches, an everyday walk on the battlefield of life with just normal people. Tune into that. Call in, have a conversation. The biggest thing guys don't understand, therapy don't make you weak. It really doesn't. What makes you weak is swallowing that emotion, swallowing the years of whatever. Your trauma doesn't have to be sexual abuse to be trauma. It's still traumatic. You still have a voice, and you still have the opportunity to get out of there. And the second is get into some physical activity. If you're not in some physical activity, there is a real disconnect between mind and body. Getting back into jiu-jitsu, getting into jiu-jitsu has been an amazing encounter for me. Mind and body reconnecting, that's probably been the best.
Well, I've been talking with abuse survivor Paul Nyer and his wife Liesl Nyer and WCPOI team chief investigative reporter Craig Cheatham. Thank you all so much for your time today.
Yes,
absolutely. Thank you for having us.
Thank you, Lucy.
Up next, we'll talk with experts about how to keep your spending in check this holiday season. This is Cincinnati Edition.